welcome to La Liga Weekly. Ooh. Right, so that's the Barca game covered. What else happened this weekend? I suspect we saw an attempted refereeing renaissance. Don't send him off. Don't send him off. But he looked at you funny. Send him off. No, don't send him off. Ref, there's a guy on the bench waving his hands contemptuously. You should send him off. No, resist. It meant sort of okay until Sevilla's Fernando blocked a shot with his arm, which would have been handball in 1978. Thankfully, there's a real air of professional positivity at Valencia Club de Football these days, and when things go against them, they bounce back, stay focused and show their resilience. Relegation will act as a reset, won't it? Peter Lim will finally release the club from the tortured chamber if they go down, won't he? Well, elsewhere, Real Madrid beat Cadiz and showed the utmost respect for their Champions League opponents, Chelsea, by playing Karim Benzema for the full 90 minutes. I was enjoying his performance, Carlo Ancelotti said, adding later, and have you seen Chelsea play recently? The Big Basque derby was settled by the famously efficient finishing of Iñaki Williams. Of course, it helped that this weekend the refs were randomly ignoring all of the recent handball initiatives, such as the one that he handballed just before he scored the opening goal. But as the refs might say, what do you want? On most weeks on this podcast, you're moaning about us being too harsh, so we ignore a few handballs and you still have fair point. See, also, what do you want? We can't spend any money. The league president hates us and we're top of the league. So what if the games are a bit boring? I seem to have changed characters. Right, so that's... There we are. Right, Terry... So the Patreons will be able to see, because they get a video, the Patreons will be able to see Terry Gibson with a football shirt behind you, Terry, which I you asked me what it was and I failed to identify.
I'm not surprised. It's a Yugoslavia shirt from probably, I think, 1979 that I've not recently come across. I've known it's always been there, but a collection of stuff that's driven my family mad over the years that I've hauled around from house to house. I kept everything and I've suddenly realised that it's got a worth. I put a shirt on Twitter the other week, a commentary shirt, and asked, I no intention of doing anything with it, just what is this commentary shirt that I, because I never played in it, and it's like a big T on the front with a sponsor yellow. I put it on Twitter because I had no recollection of ever understanding where this shirt come from, and it was a rare shirt that had been worn only twice by Coventry City back in, I think it was 82-83 season against Aston Villa and Everton. All of a sudden, they had people wanting to buy it, and I got a decent amount of money for it. And then that's led to a couple of other jerseys going. So I've realised this whole market of stuff that I've hauled around for over 40 years. And I just thought, you know what? I haven't had the chance to enjoy them at all. They've been in a box. I kept them from 79, 1980, 1981 and stuff like that. And just thought, oh, I can't get rid of that, can't get rid of that. And then all of a sudden, I'm coming across people that really want them and really want to enjoy them. So this is the first time this has been out of a box and out of the garage for 40 years, this shirt. And I just thought, Yugoslavia is an interesting one. Country, it doesn't exist. I've got a Czechoslovakia one as well. Italy, France, and some various Spurs shirts and tracksuit tops and
stuff.
Did you swap
that after
England?
It's
like a treasure trove. Yes.
So you played an England youth game and then swapped that with somebody.
Yep, I've got loads of England shirts as well, and they're a rarity. It's the Admiral kit, the Kevin Keegan kit. And people don't realise that back in these days, our shirts were different to the ones you bought in the shops. I didn't really place much importance on it until 40 years on. You think, actually, no, the amount of kits that are about nowadays that are every game. Players keep their shirts.
Chucking them in the crowd, aren't they? Yeah.
And they're the same shirt as you buy in the replica shop. There's no difference between the shirts anymore. Whereas back when I was playing, the shirts were a different material, they had different logos on. There was easily proof that it was an authentic match shirt as opposed to just buying one out the replica store. So, yeah, I'm going to try and enjoy them. And if people want to do make offers for stuff that, you know, that they really covet and really enjoy, then that might be the option. So this isn't purely advertising that I've got a collection of rare football shirts, but it is a chance to actually put it on show.
So they have a sentimental value, but one that can be matched by cash at a certain
point. I have got certain items that I wouldn't go with. So there's my debut shirt from Spurs. I was lucky to keep because it got ripped. If it hadn't been ripped, I wouldn't have kept it. That shirt would have lasted. It was a number 9 Admiral Tottenham Hotspur shirt, 1979. That would have lasted the rest of the season.
So you had
probably
to,
the next season.
So it was like, because when I played, you basically grabbed a shirt. They basically tipped the shirts on the dressing room floor.
Yep.
And you would basically try and grab the one that matched the position you were playing. And then you gave it back at the end, or someone would take them home and wash them at the end. So you wore that. Normally, you'd wear a shirt and then you'd give it to the kit man and he would wash it. And then you'd get given one next time.
Totally. Yeah. And it depended on, a lot of it was based on what number you were in the program.
Right, yeah.
In the program, you'd replace the player that was missing that day. So, for instance, I've got a video I found and come across on YouTube playing for Coventry, and I got number 2 of them. And I was a centre forward. I'm presuming the number 2 was missing. I'd been out, injured, suspended, or dropped, and came back into the team, and the number that was available was number 2. So I actually saw the video and thought, that's not me. Mm-hmm. I vaguely remembered scoring this goal against Sheffield Wednesday, and it was an away kit number 2. It was obviously because, do you remember, you probably don't, I remember going to games as a youngster, and the Tannoy announcer would do the programme changes.
Yes.
And you would try to keep up.
Yeah.
So out of decency to the paying public, they didn't want to just to change players' numbers as opposed to, because sometimes you'd be the number 5, say Ricky Villa would be playing number 8. So you're changing him from number 5 to number 8. And it's just to keep it as easy as possible for the people in the stadium that were listening to the programme changes, keep it as straightforward as possible. And just if there was a player missing, because those teams that were listed in the programme were probably done a week before.
Yeah.
They were just taken from the previous game.
Sent to the printer on the Wednesday or something, weren't they? Yeah.
So yeah.
They, yeah. So but also, you didn't get the squads didn't rotate in the same way, did they? So teams would make a change or two, wouldn't they? And
So they just kept it simple. So straightforward for that Coventry game would have been number 2 is now Terry Gibson instead of Brian Burrows or something, or Kirk Stevens, the regular number 2. There must have been a shift around in position. Someone must have gone from right wing to right back or something, and I came in up front. So I'm going to try and see and actually use them for sticking them behind me and podcasts I do and stuff like that, just out of interest. As I said, I've got other ones that people will go, what country is that? You know, it's a lot of them haven't changed, funny enough. I look at the Denmark kit and I think, that could be a Denmark kit now. It's Hummel. It could be Michael Laudrup's shirt, funny enough.
Yeah.
So you don't remember
who you swapped it with?
No, I wouldn't have known Michael Laudrup was a superstar in the making then either. So we played them, and I've got the number 8.
Has it got a number on the back?
Yeah, and I've got about 6 of the players' numbers in the 11, and he was in the 11. And out of the 6 players I've got, there's no number 8. So there's 5 players left. And it might be Michael Laudrup. Yeah. But as I say, I've got my Tottenham shirt, the cup final shirt, various bits and bobs that I wouldn't part with. But this other stuff that I've accumulated over the years it's been good fun. I'm going to have a little bit of fun with it and see what happens.
Yeah.
And if actually people do want them a lot more than I do, then, as you said, I'm quite... The guy that bought the Comtry shirt was absolutely delighted.
He's
avid collector. It's a rare shirt, and he keeps sending me messages saying, thank you for letting me have the shirt. And he bought it. And so there's a community of people that collect these rare... And I have to be honest, it is vintage now. Some of them are 44 years old, and I'm thinking, well, if I keep it to 50, does that increase the worth of it? So it's a good fun. People do collect them. People even collect them when they're not legitimate match shirts. They're just people's replica shirts they bought 40, 50 years ago, and they've kept them in the garage and sell them and stuff. So there is a whole market out because the life of a kit was completely different then compared to now. We used to, at Spurs, the first team were playing Lecoq, the reserves were playing the old Admiral kit, and then the youth team were playing in Umbro kit. So it was like passed down over, so you imagine the times that before that shirt was actually, no one can wear this shirt anymore. Mm. And then it might be a training shirt. Mm. So it wasn't a shirt where you've worn one game and thrown in the crowd or swapped with another player and get another brand new shirt. the lifespan of the, they really did get the most out of those. And it was one size fits all. That was the other thing.
Oh,
I
was
love
it?
that.
Right.
Yeah, there was the number nine Spurs shirt I've got that I kept, only because it was ripped and the kit man couldn't repair it. Otherwise, I would never have kept that shirt. Would have been for me one week. It could have been for Jerry Armstrong the next week. So that number nine had to fit me and Jerry Armstrong and various big centre forwards that I played with.
That's a bit, yeah. So
So,
number nine, so you wearing number nine, if you're,
yeah.
sharing a shirt with, I don't know, John
And once
Fashanu
there
or
was only
someone.
one size, there was only one size. It was, I think it's men's large. That's it. There was no small versions of the first team kit. It was just short sleeve, long
So
sleeve,
who tore
one
your shirt
size.
on your debut? Do you remember?
It was a yeah, I do, yeah, of course. It was a centre back from Stoke called Mike Doyle.
Oh yeah, I remember him, yeah.
The tear was a stamp when I was on the floor.
Oh really? Right,
Yeah,
okay.
so I, in fairness, I just two-footed the goalkeeper. So, and as I was sliding in, two-footing the goalkeeper, he slid in and two-footed me on the chest. And it ripped from the collar down to the waist. A lovely stud mark underneath it as well.
How far into the game?
I had about 80 minutes, I think.
Oh, right, okay,
So
right.
I was substituted shortly after.
Right.
Massive standing ovation, standing up to all the big brutes that Stoke had in their back four. And yeah, was able to keep my shirt. It took 2 weeks. I kept begging the kit man for it.
Oh, right,
And he
okay.
kept saying, because no one kept their shirt,
Yeah.
and I was begging for it. I was an apprentice at the time, so I wasn't a professional. So I was in every day, and I kept saying, Johnny Wallace's name was John. Come on, let me have that shirt. Come on. No, it can be repaired. And then one day, about 2 weeks later, he just threw it at me and said, yeah, you can have it. And that was it. And I've kept it since December the 29th, 1979. So
There we are.
yeah, I'm extremely grateful. So there's the, it'd be interesting. It is interesting. We were talking about the iconic kits of Middlesbrough and Tottenham, and you don't realise you've got them. And interesting to see what other supporters think about their iconic kits as well, which, particularly the Spanish clubs.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the Rayo kit is the nicest kit in the league at the moment. I think that's a lovely kit, and everyone loves that. There are classic Real Madrid, Barcelona kits and Valencia kits. It's a good topic to
Yes.
get into.
Yeah. Well, let us know if you've got any good stories or you've got any good stuff that you want us to sell on for you. Right, I've got a question from Paul Campbell. We'll get to this weekend's La Liga soon. However, Paul's got a question. Paul Campbell is one of our Patreons. Starting the first day of the Camino del Norte hike, going to be walking right along the north coast of Spain over the next month and a bit. Good work. So he's planned a 3-day weekend next weekend, seeing Eibar, Real Unión de Irún, and Amorebieta. So he wants other recommendations. So he's walking across the whole north of Spain, grounds and the like. So he did San Mamés, February, and El Sardinero, and he made videos. So yeah, feel free to send us the videos, Paul. Again, we'll share them with the
Excellent.
Patreons. But yeah, any ideas, any suggestions for lovely grounds or interesting places you've been in the very north of Spain? Get in touch. So probably Twitter or the Patreons via Patreon. You've got your own messaging service, or Twitter at Driscoll FC, Terry Gibson 88. Any of you want to buy any kits, and at La Liga underscore weekly. Yeah. So any ideas for Paul? I'm sure you've probably been to San Sebastian because Paul lives in Spain. So, but San Sebastian is a beautiful place to visit, isn't it? With the beaches
Yes.
right next to the city centre, and obviously go and see some football if you possibly can. So, but yeah, I think he wants off slightly more offbeat suggestions
I'm
as well.
trying to think, Coruña, is that that's north, isn't it?
I guess, well, it's not on
Deadpool.
the north coast, is it? I guess I don't know. Yeah, I'm not familiar with the hike, but
Asturias.
yeah, yes, yeah. So you would be walking through there,
Asturias. That's a lovely part of Spain, Asturias. She's sporting Gijón. And Oviedo, that's a lovely part of the country as well.
So yeah, let us know, Paul. Let us know, and any ideas, any interesting football clubs that Paul might not have thought of, if you know the very north top end of Spain, then yeah, get in touch. Darren has also been in touch. Now, is about Barcelona. Shall we start with Barcelona, Terry?
Yes.
But, Darren, so he follows up from, we had a brief conversation about how long they're going to be in Montjuic for. So he says the optimistic date is November 2024 to complete it, but more people are talking about it being two full seasons. It holds 50,000, so he points out a significant drop in match day revenue coming Barcelona's way. They've asked the first three fixtures next season to be away from home, so they can help prepare Montjuic for hosting games. Now, then he gets onto the football. The trend of Barca failing to recover from emotional setbacks is continuing. The Clásico defeats in the Copa, especially the manner in which they conceded the first goal, seems to have sapped all confidence. I might be mad saying this, but I don't think the title is done yet. I think this period of four rounds of games in the space of 11 days could be defining. Barca have Atletico and Betis to play in that block. The return of Pedri and De Jong can't come soon enough. Otherwise, they could be relying on Real Madrid dropping more points and then doing the job themselves. Oh, so we had a discussion. We stayed up to record the podcast late on Monday. It was a boring game. And then Getafe 0, Barcelona 0. Oh, it's hard going, Terry. But yeah, anyway, so talk about the game. And then I'll put the caveat. They are still top of the league, of course.
Yeah, and I think we'll talk more about the fixtures coming up and the points that are needed now to win the game. The draw against Girona was poor. The game against Getafe, another 0-0. It's their 22nd clean sheet. They've still only conceded 9 goals, but they're uninspiring. Watch them in terms of their attacking play. And the players we mentioned, Pedri, Dembele, Frenkie de Jong, are clearly being missed. It's a bit of a mystery as to why Pedri was almost going to be fit for the Clásico, and we haven't heard anything about him since. And Frankie de Jong's injury is taking longer than expected, I think, and likewise Dembele. So those players, there are reasons for them not being as potent in attack. Lewandowski's form hasn't been particularly good. We can maybe talk about, debate the lack of service. We can debate... There's no debate. Getafe didn't water the pitch, which didn't suit Xavi and didn't suit Barcelona. But listen, in terms of that, it was in a mud bath.
Yeah.
Know, back in the day when someone might have flooded the pitch and had a I don't know, monster truck derby on it 24 hours before the game. That's not the case. The pitch isn't watered. It's a little bit dry. That's not enough to stop Barcelona from playing as they did. Getafe away in this situation isn't an easy game. Barcelona did create chances. They didn't take them. It wasn't they didn't create an abundance of chances where you're thinking, you know, we'll talk about Real Madrid, you know, thinking, how are they not leading that game against Cadiz? But Barcelona, it wasn't like that. Spells of pressure, more possession, obviously, which Getafe weren't worried about and weren't interested in having possession. So a tough, scrappy, aggressive performance from Getafe was enough to nullify the threat of Barcelona. And it just looks disjointed. Balde playing in the front three this time. Jordi Alba came in as a sub last week and played up front in the front three. This time Alba was at the back, Balde was up front. It's Xavi's searching, isn't he? You know, but it wasn't a great game. But it's not a disaster. Because as I say, I think Getafe, they should be higher in the league than what they are. I think they would be all right. It's a hard 1 point for Kike Sanchez Flores and his team. But the debate now has to be 17 points from 9 games.
Yeah.
So that's to win the league. They can't win it with... They need 90 points. 89 won't be enough because Real Madrid would have the better in terms of head-to-head. So they need 17 points from 9 games. You think if they don't get that, it's a historic collapse that will be spoken about forever, the way that Barcelona have lost this title. And I look at the games, it might get a little bit scary. The 11 clear, Atletico next week at home. It's a big game that might rise to the occasion as opposed to playing on a Monday night against Girona and away on Sunday afternoon at Getafe. They might liven themselves up. I don't know if any of the injured players are going to be back fit for that game. Atletico, and then you talked about Betis. They've got Rayo away as well. It's the next game. And then Betis at home. Then the games do fall into place where you think that there's no way they should be, you know, losing at home to Osasuna, at home to Real Sociedad, which would be a tough game. They've got Valladolid away, Mallorca at home, Celta. So it's a tidy little run-in. But bearing in mind they haven't scored for two games, they do have players missing. And if they were to lose against Atletico and the gap is cut down to 8, then it might start being an issue where the you know, if the form isn't good, they're not scoring goals. Real Madrid have got to win for Barcelona to win to need the 90 points. Real Madrid have got to win every game. Probably unlikely, if I'm being honest. I think there's maybe one or two games Real Madrid might draw, depending on the Champions League and stuff like that. So it may not be 90, but 17 points from 19 games from nine games should be comfortable. But it's not. If they were to Atletico next week, Real Madrid win, it's down to eight. Then I think they. We have to then talk about the possibility of it happening.
Is there a tactical element to this, or is it down to personnel?
I think it's down to personnel, tactical, and the technical side of it. I think my criticism would be the play is slow. Mm. It's a little bit too slow and deliberate at the moment. And I do think at times when Barcelona play, I'm setting the standard by the Super Cup performance against Real Madrid, where they moved the ball so quickly, and it was the best performance of the season by a long way. And there have been some other good performances. I mean, we're talking about a team that 11 points clear. We're criticising Lewandowski, but he's the top scorer in the league. If they win the title, it's a massive achievement from where they were in the summer, from where Real Madrid are, you know, currently and were in the summer. Real Madrid were favourites. Real Madrid started the season off better, but Barcelona have been top since week 13. They've been top of the pile. So we will have to give them credit. But it's not going to be one of the historically attractive, great, memorable Barcelona league titles. But we do have to give them credit for it. If they do win the league, it's a brilliant achievement. I think they'll do it. Of course they do. I think, you know, but it is... Depending if they were to lose to Atletico and Real Madrid win, and so if it goes down to eight, then it becomes, this, you know, need to be careful here.
They have only, I've got a stat for you, 13th highest goal scorers in Europe, which isn't great. They've only got to two in XG twice in 2023, which suggests that the chances have simply dried up. So it's not just that Lewandowski as an individual isn't scoring, although his finishing stats are about average, about where he should be. So, you know, not great for us, you know, given how he started and how much money they paid for him and all of that. But yeah, the chances have dried up. The games have dried up, haven't they?
Pedri's the link, isn't he?
Yeah.
Pedri and Dembele probably. And Frankie de Jong hasn't missed as much, but we don't tend to talk about him as a creative influence, but he is. So that's three top players that they're missing. As I say, it's a mystery how they've been out for so long, and we don't tend to get too many updates. The last update I had on Pedri was he was going to be fit for the Clásico in the league game. And then at the last minute, it was, no, there'd been a setback, and we haven't seen him since. So those three players are key.
Real Madrid. So we talked about them with the Patreons last week, about the Chelsea game, which was won comfortably. It wasn't a glittering Real Madrid performance, and they followed up with a victory over Cadiz. The game, the goals, I mean, Nacho, it took a Nacho goal to open the scoring in the 72nd minute, and then Asensio followed it up pretty quickly after that. Obviously, Cadiz were hopeful of hanging on for what would have been a really useful point.
Oh, hanging on was the word. David Heuing goal was... Ledesma's finished his suspension now, so he's probably going to come back in the team. But David Heal, I think 35 shots Real Madrid had. you get into that stage where you think, they're not going to score. You know, there was really good chances missed. Times where they overplayed in the 18-yard box, where someone could have finished it and tapped it to a teammate who thought was in a better position. And Cadiz, Fally in particular, was chucking himself about all over the 18-yard box, putting out fires all over the place. And you're thinking, this performance from Real Madrid is brilliant. But it's 0-0 with 70 minutes gone. And then Nacho steps forward and unleashes one just as his brother had come on as a sub for the opposition. Great footage, wasn't there? The two of them sitting in the tunnel with their back to the camera discussing what had just happened. Alex Fernandez and his brother Nacho So that was a sort of bittersweet moment. Nacho pleased to get his team the first goal, pleased to get the win, but at the same time disappointed that his brother's team didn't pick up anything in their fight against relegation. But Real Madrid, they were brilliant in this game. And as I said, loads of changes. They were brilliant in the game against Chelsea. Only got the two goals. Kind of, I thought they had too much respect for Chelsea in the first leg of the Champions League game. I think they kind of thought they were playing against the Chelsea that run them close last year in the Champions League and the Chelsea that beat them the year before.
Yeah.
They didn't go looking for the kill. It was as if they settled for the two goal advantage to go back to Stamford Bridge. Probably bearing in mind that Chelsea left to attack more and Real Madrid will find a little bit more space with their attacking play. But I think they were wary of conceding a goal. So even though Chelsea were down to 10, they didn't go for the kill. Now, Real Madrid are in good shape at the moment. Real Madrid clearly got a bigger and better squad than Barcelona, which makes the achievement of Barcelona, if they win the league this year, you really have to question Real Madrid and say that's a failure that they haven't won the league this year. Of course, if they win the Champions League, it would be glossed over. So if Barcelona do win the title against this Real Madrid team, make loads of changes. You know, of course, Real Madrid have got key players. If they were missing, we would talk about them. But they've got better players to come in than Barcelona have. So we're talking about De Jong and Pedri and Dembele missing. If Real Madrid were to be missing Benzema and Modric, Benzema's the only one I would say, but Rodrigo does well up front. So the squad is better and deeper for Real Madrid. It's more settled. It's been built over a longer period. This isn't, you know, like Barcelona where they brought in loads of new players last summer. Some have worked, some haven't. So Real Madrid in this game, they were brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I'm amazed that Benzema played the whole game. I can't believe it. There must be discussion between him and Ancelotti. He played well. He didn't score. He should have done. But there must be a discussion where Benzema's probably... They're talking, Benzema says, no, I'm fine, I'm only playing at 60%. I'm not busting a gut, just, you know, do this, do that, and he still looks good. But it's a risk, isn't it? Because as I say, he's the one player, if he's missing, you're looking at Rodrigo playing up front, and he's good, but you're looking at then Mariano Diaz, that's not so good because he doesn't play. So it is a risk. I don't think it's a risk worth taking, but maybe Real Madrid still believe that they can make rotations, but they still believe they've got a chance of catching Barcelona.
Atletico beat Almeria by 2-1, which makes it sound closer than it actually was. Antoine Griezmann, because Almeria didn't have a single shot on target, did they? It's an own goal, isn't it? By Jimenez that led to the goal. Sparkling performance by Antoine Griezmann, who's had this weird season, hasn't he? You know, where he wasn't allowed to play until the 60th minute and all of that. And then he's been in brilliant form since he's been allowed to play start games.
Exactly. And he was playing well in those 30 minutes when he was allowed to play. He was coming off the bench and scoring goals. And it was just bizarre. And then that got sorted out. Then he went off to the World Cup and had a really good World Cup. And is probably, along with Benzema, the best player in La Liga at the moment, I'd say. And has been since the World Cup. And the two goals in this game, two really good goals, header from a flick on it and near post from a corner, determination to hold the defender off. Second one was a really nice finish, actually. We just kind of be looking and think, oh, it's just a tapping, but the way he sort of punched it sharply into the goal with his, you know, a nice firm side foot finish. It was a really good goal. Atleti were great. It's quite a lot of them, though. You look at them and you think, I think I did them recently against Valencia. They hammered Valencia. And you're talking as if it's 5 or 6 nil when it was only 3 or 2 at the time and they got a third late 12 in the game. They don't tend to finish teams off. And this game was a classic example of that. They were much better than Almeria. I mean, Leo Baptista is credited with the goal.
Is he?
I forgot he played for Atletico Madrid when he refused to celebrate until he refused to celebrate. And I thought, hang on, mate, you're in a relegation battle. Atletico supporters forgot that you played for Atletico. They've only realised now that you had a short spell at the club when you apologised for scoring. And, you know, it was touch and go whether they were going to actually get the win. I mean, it was bizarre. I mean, when it went 1-1, you think, how has that happened? It should be about 3 or 4 nil. And it wasn't. And then, you know, Griezmann got the second and took them ahead again. But they still didn't kill them off. But they're in great form. I think six straight wins in La Liga. It's going to be a really good game next week against Barcelona. And they'll go into it in good spirit. So everything at Atletico is ticking along really nicely.
Bizarre stat, they are the only club in La Liga with two 10-goal forwards.
Hey.
Yeah. It's there's just, you know, we've discussed before this relative shortage of goals, which actually hasn't been an issue in the last few weeks. I think, you know, we haven't had a sort of, you know, one of the rounds of games where I'm feeling quite sorry for whoever's in the studio in La Liga TV. It's a, you know, 10-hour shift discussing four goals, same four goals going round and round on rotation. But
so Barcelona haven't. Real Madrid rely on Benzema. Vinicius, you think, will be there.
He must be there soon, mustn't he?
He must be. I think he's on nine, I think.
Right, yeah.
Espanyol must be close with Hossolu and Brathwaite. Must be just below 10. But, you know, I think you're right, definitely. Yeah. That is definitely right, but it's just interesting. So that's Morata and Griezmann at Atletico, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then Carrera is probably far behind them as well.
So there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 strikers who've got to 10. Yeah, Brathwaite's on 9, you're right, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's basically, it's Lewandowski, 17, Benzema, 14, Enes Unal, 13, Aspas, Borja, Hossolu, and Marici are all on 12, Griezmann, 11, and Morata, 10 after that. So there's quite a lot of clubs. Oh, Celta are only one away with Gabri Vega.
Yeah.
And Vinny's on 9 as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it will stop being a stat soon, but it's
that's week 29. It's quite late in the day though, isn't it? One club to have two attackers that have got 10 goals.
Yeah.
That's pretty late in the season. Mm. That's surprising it's that one.
Right. The other theory, right, is the referees were doing something different this weekend, weren't they? They were trying,
yes,
not to give so many cards out. I think it was although almost they couldn't help themselves. A couple got flashed here and there, didn't they? Yeah. And then the handball thing, I think, and I think it was a bit of a mess, if I'm honest. Let's talk about the Valencia Sevilla game. Red card in that one for Ilaix Mariba, wasn't there? And then the non-handball was significant. Valencia were furious. And as I was messing around at the beginning, they don't take it well. There's so much tension in the air at Mestalla, isn't there? And they don't respond well to setbacks, do they? So the performance after all of that was really poor. They just
didn't. You can't change the laws during the season. You can't do that. And I think that was the case with that. I don't think it was a penalty, but there's been hundreds of other penalties that have been given this season that I didn't think were penalties.
Yeah.
But I think in keeping with the laws of the game we've had all season in the league, that should have been a penalty. That he tries to keep his arm tucked behind his back, doesn't he? It's a ball spins up and hits him. His arm isn't out at the number 3 o'clock. It's not wide out. He tries to get it behind and it does strike the arm. But when you look at the other penalties that we've seen given this season, it should have been a penalty. Mm. So you can't change it with 9 games to go. So I did feel for Valencia on that one. They Sevilla had a stroke of luck with the goal, the first goal as well, didn't they? With Younes Musa and Loic Badi tussling. And on one angle, it did look like Loic Badi threw the arm out. But he threw the arm out because Younes Musa was climbing all over him and holding him. It's a natural reaction sometimes. We even see assistant referees in the Premier League throw their arm out. So that Sevilla had a good fortune of those two decisions going their way. But there was an element of the referee in that game in particular that I thought he lost control and he was looking for help from VAR too many times. There was one, I think, where Sevilla... similar to the situation last week where the referee allowed the play to continue and then brought it back. There was one in that game where there was a tackle. I think it was Ocampos, won the ball and drove towards the 18-yard box. And literally, it was longer than last week's one. It was 4 or 5 seconds and the referee blew the whistle. And the referee held his finger on his ear
as if
he was getting instruction. He hadn't given the foul. And then he brings the play back. Hooked him.
Yeah, it was weird, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And because there was the Gavi one in the Barcelona game in the early minutes, first minute, second minute. It looked like Busquets should have been booked. And actually, Busquets had more reason to be booked than Gavi. And that was an example of a referee just, it was all an automatic, instinctive reaction to show a yellow card without thinking it through and thinking, yeah, it's a foul. I don't think it's particularly bad. I'm not going to give a yellow card when I'm not sure. In the first minute of a game.
Yeah.
And you could see all the players, even the Getafe players, were thinking, where's this going to be for the rest of the game?
If the Ocampos one was weird, wasn't it? Because I thought that. He thought like he was taking live instructions, wasn't it, from the bar or something? Yeah.
He put his finger to his ear.
Yeah, it's definitely a foul. Yeah. Which I, years ago, when we were just debating video use in football, I thought that's what it might be, in that. The guy, you might have, they do this in rugby, where they have a dialogue. Whereas we've got in football, we've got this very strict protocol about what the VAR can do, when they can do it, and it's pathetic and it takes too long. I thought it would be stuff like, oh, you've missed that. Oh, he's fouled in there, mate, you missed it.
Yeah.
But it's not. But so, no. Like you say, you can't suddenly decide it's that.
No, exactly.
In the middle of April.
And the handball. Handballs we've seen this season, that would have been given. So you can't change the laws of the game in week 29. And I know there is criticism of how many penalties are given, how many red cards are given, but that has to be resolved next season. It was interesting, last week, the Real Madrid-Chelsea game. Real Madrid, three or four times in the first 15 minutes, got tackled and stopped the play because they expected the foul.
Yeah.
And when it wasn't given, there was kind of they embraced it. And their game was more aggressive because they suddenly realised, oh, this isn't a La Liga ref.
Mm.
We can start being more aggressive. We can start putting our foot in. We can go shoulder to shoulder. And Real Madrid embraced it and enjoyed the fact that the referee wasn't blowing up. So there has to be a change in how the game is refereed in La Liga.
Yeah,
too many free kicks.
You identified
too many handballs. Too many sendings off.
When the Spanish clubs were struggling in the Champions League in the autumn, this business where they kept thinking they were going to get free kicks for stuff and they weren't, and they were
exactly
being bullied out of games by teams from other countries.
And Real Madrid have got the players that can look after themselves.
Yeah,
that are strong. Yeah. They're physical. They're aggressive. But it took them 10 minutes against Chelsea to think. To realise, this isn't the switch on. This is a European game and we can be more aggressive and teams can be more aggressive to us. If you want to be aggressive against Real Madrid, they've got the players, their best players. I mean, Modric is a competitive little so-and-so midfield. Toni Kroos knows his way around a midfield battle. You know, Tchouaméni, Camavinga, Vinicius Jr., powerful. You know, he doesn't mind. If it can be a physical battle, Benzema knows what he's doing when it comes to that side of the game. So, but they're not used to it. They don't have to do that in La Liga. But when they woke up and realised against Chelsea that, oh, well, that's three times one of us has been nudged over and not, I mean, the foul hasn't been given. Yeah. Oh, this is the different rules. So that's for the longer term in Spain, but they can't change it during this season.
Yeah, halfway through a game.
As I say, Sevilla were fortunate with the two decisions that went their way. Valencia, they huff and puff. A couple of decisions from Ruben Baraco, I don't understand. How are you playing Tony Lato in a must-win game at home against a rival opponent? So you've got two fullbacks on one side, and you're leaving Samuel Lino out when you're already missing Justin Kluivert. So that was bizarre that he chose that. Mm. They do get the ball in the box. They don't get enough plays in the box. So there's things they can improve on. For so much of the game, they were even with Sevilla, possibly even better in the first half. But you don't see them because if they're going to score a goal. Mm. So there's not enough players getting from midfield into the penalty box. Cavani's not getting enough support in the penalty box. So there has to be tactically, and the style of Valencia has to change going into the games coming up. It's a real threat now that they're going to get relegated. Man, I'm looking at their games. They could be out of it in the next 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Yeah. They've got Elche away next game. I mean, everyone's beating Elche. You cannot not win that game. But it's not going to be easy because Elche each week are competitive without winning. So that's a must-win game. Morale will be rock bottom if they don't get the win there. Then they've got Valladolid at home, Cadiz away. So we're talking three games that are winnable for Valencia there. Mm. And obviously, Valencia are in better form and are decent at home. Then they've got Vieira at home, tough game, derby. Celta away, Real Madrid at home, Mallorca away, another possible relegation battle if Mallorca don't get anything against Celta this evening. Espanyol, and they finish away to Betis. So it's a mixed bag for Valencia. And they're playing a lot of teams that are in and around the relegation battle. But they need morale, they need confidence. They've got lots of young players. And when things are going against them, the crowd are losing patience. I saw footage of the team bus leaving the stadium. It was ugly. The young players are going to need support as opposed to the hostility that you can get.
Yeah, there's a real double edge to Valencia's support, isn't it? I've always thought this, where they're so desperate for things to go well. There is a real danger that they create a negative atmosphere too quickly, really, around a game, particularly for a young team under pressure.
I agree totally. The players need the support. Listen, the Valencia supporters cannot criticise their team for a lack of determination, lack of effort, poor attitude. So stick with it. There's nothing to be gained now. The ownership isn't going to change with nine games to go. The manager,
they shouldn't change him now.
They shouldn't. Yeah. It might not. But nothing is going to drastically should change. So what's to be gained from hammering the team? They know it's been a terrible season.
Yeah.
You know, whoever's been in charge knows it's a terrible season, but the supporters really do need to play their part, particularly the game at Elche. There should be good travelling support. There should be, you know, fantastic support in a six-pointer against Valladolid. You know, it's a massive club. You want them to stay in the league for the right reasons. I don't particularly want anyone to go down, but this is a real dramatic story that's developing in La Liga. They're not there with 15, 16 games to go, like Seville. I always thought Seville would get out of it, and they're clearly going to get out of it. This is Valencia down in relegation position with nine games to go and tough games to go and not playing well, not winning games, terrible away record. This is critical for the club. So they need that support to be behind them.
Let's go to the Basque derby, the big Basque derby. Athletic beat Real Sociedad by 2-0. And Iñaki Williams with both goals. We had the discussion about the handball. I'm convinced the handball's the first one. Bounces behind him. I think it hits his elbow.
Yep.
And I think it's a crucial touch because it spins up and it allows him to then control it. And to be fair, he did really well from there, didn't he? He turned and finished the chance. The second goal was brilliantly taken.
Oh, yeah.
We're on the verge of history, Terry, with Iñaki Williams. He's never... If you look
what
back
now?
Through, yeah, yeah. So you look back through... Or since they've been collecting the XG minus G minus X goals versus the XG, that comparison shows how good a finish you are. He's never been in the positives. He's just over the positive at the moment. He's just in the green. Nine games to go. He could actually get there and be a positive finisher for the first time in his career. So he was the hero of the day and a big, you know, important win for them. Another defeat for Real Sociedad.
Yeah, this was a close game. Real Sociedad had probably as many chances as Athletic Club. Didn't take them. Sorloff missed a sitter, Taka Kubo missed a good opportunity as well. In particular, they were the two biggest ones. And it really could have gone either way. So I'm not one of those that wants to hammer Iñaki Williams week after week. He's got attributes that are brilliant, fantastic. Speed, he works hard, brilliant attitude. Great, great team player. Yes, we can criticise the fact he doesn't always stick the chances away. The second goal was brilliant. You know, to strike it in the manner that he did with the power to beat Alex Romero in goal, it was a brilliant strike. So, big win for Athletic Club. It kind of puts them back in it because we're at this, I say, pretty much every week on the podcast. We're not near the end of the season yet. We've got nine games to go. It's mid-April. I know that. I get that. But we're not... There is chance for Athletic... outside chance for them to climb back into the race for the top four.
Yeah,
I mean, it's an outside chance. I mean, you're looking at Real Sociedad, still are 8 points above them. But if we're talking about, you know, next week, if Real Sociedad don't win and then the Athletic Club win again, then all of a sudden that gap could be five and you think, oh, this is back on.
Yeah. So or at least get top six.
Big win.
And you know, Europa League or I forget, who gets the Conference League? That would be the lowest seventh league qualifier, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be seventh.
So they should be right for that. They'd go Europa League. And then the Conference League would be whoever finished sixth, therefore, I'm guessing. I'm working out.
Top four Champions League, isn't it? Yeah. Fifth and sixth, Europa League.
Yeah.
Seventh, Conference League.
Yeah. But Osasuna.
Osasuna.
They would take a Europa League place, wouldn't they? I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. Anyway, correct us if we're wrong. In fact, I'll look it up and I'll tell you if we're wrong. Right, elsewhere, one of the results of the weekend is Valladolid winning away to Villarreal, of course.
Yes, I mean, a few changes made by Kike Setién, not all of them forced, which was slightly surprising after the win against Real Madrid. And you look at the goals that they concede, defensively, not great, and the goalkeeper, Pepe Reina, looked faulty when he was stumbling around trying to show some agility for both goals. Both goals, I think a goalkeeper younger might have been a bit more agile and saved him. He's having a really mixed season, is he, Pepe Reina? Some games you think fantastic, and other games you're thinking that does look like a goalkeeper in his 40s now. So that was the big problem. But right, that it were rewarded for attitude. You know, their away form hasn't been great. It's been far from it. So for them to go to opponents who have just beaten Real Madrid, they're probably thinking the momentum is with us in terms of the top four. And I think everybody assumed that. It changes every week. I keep changing my mind on who's going to get top four.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I said last week Betis and then also Villarreal win and Betis don't win. And then you think, oh, I'm going to go with Villarreal this week. And then this week I'm going back with Betis. And funny enough, I don't tend to have too much faith in Real Sociedad. Mm-hmm. I just think they've lost form and they're not scoring goals. And I'm finding it really difficult. So it was a massive surprise that Villarreal lost at home to Valladolid. So it's a huge surprise. I thought after the Real Madrid win, I thought Villarreal would go on a really good run, continue that run. They've been on a decent run of form under Kike Setién, but they blew it with this result. But massive 3 points for Valladolid. El Yamik just kept running and running and running, didn't he? And thinking, El Yamik is the centre-half. Gets out the back, carries on running, and no one stops him, and he just keeps going and going, and then prods it towards goal, and Pepe Reina was all over the place again. So, massive win for Valladolid.
No slip-up for Betis. A 3-1 against Espanyol, which puts them... It's a little bit of an unconvincing race for fourth, isn't it, as you say, because teams keep dropping points. So they've all got the same number of games played. They're all in 29. So, Real Sociedad 51. Betis now 48, Villarreal 47. Mm-hmm. And then, as you say, Athletic a bit further back on 43. Betis needed it, it's fair to say.
Yeah, and they made hard work of it, to be honest. I mean, they raced into a two-goal lead, but Espanyol, surprisingly, considering I saw their performance live the week before, they weren't bad in this game.
Mm.
And when they got the Cesar Montes scored a worldie overhead kick, the centre-back, they're back in here at 2-1. I actually thought that for a spell in the game, Espanyol were going to get something, get the equaliser with Carvalho with a really good strike. Iosi Perez with a thirst. He's been a significant signing, hasn't he, since he joined the club. I think interestingly, he's on loan, but his contract's up at Leicester.
Mm.
We've seen in various interviews how pleased he is to be back playing or be playing in La Liga because he didn't play in La Liga before he went to the UK. Yeah. But it's going to be tough for Betis to keep him, I think. Because of the financial demands that he wants.
If he wants to play, if he wants to play, he's going to have to. He's not going to get Premier League wages again, is he? Unless he goes back to the Premier League, I suppose. But
that might be the case. Might be another Premier League club might think, well, he's done well here and he's done well at Betis. Leicester weren't playing. We'll take him for a 3-year deal and a Bosman. So that's a possibility. They might be competing with a Premier League club. But the way he's playing and the way Betis are playing in this game, the influence he's having, football-wise, it would be a sensible idea, wouldn't it, to stay at Betis?
And a great place to play. But
They could be in Champions League.
And he's, you know, he's had enough money out of the Premier League,
isn't he?
You know, over the years he's been there. Right, so where else do we need to go? So there's a couple of games remaining.
We're getting one or two teams clearing out the relegation zone now, aren't we? He's your owner.
So Girona, they're right. I'm going to double check the point. In fact, I'll share the screen with the for the Patreons. And yeah, so hang on. So look, there we are. Let's nick it from Soccer Base. Thank you, everybody. Yeah, so well, Girona are ninth, aren't they? 38 points. So
yeah.
So where are we? You know, 35. Because Valencia are now considerably below a point a game, aren't they? On 27 from 29.
Yeah.
So Almeria 30, still in it. Cadiz and Getafe 31, still in it. Valladolid, great weekend, but 32, still in it. Mallorca still in it, 34 as we speak. Obviously play later.
Yeah, I think that's the cut-off point now. I think because of the teams above are in pretty, apart from Osasuna, are in pretty decent form.
Yeah.
You expect them to pick up the, you know, 5-6 points at the very least, and that takes them away from the likes of Valencia and Almeria. I think so. I think, you know, from Elche clearly gone, Espanyol, Valencia, Almeria, Cadiz, Getafe, Valladolid, and dependent on the Monday night game, Mallorca.
Yeah,
I think that's the cutoff point. So we've still got 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 teams possibly fighting against relegation with 9 games to go. But I think the Sevilla result puts them in good spirits to go to Man United now.
Yes,
in the second leg. That was the big part of this result for Sevilla. It'd be interesting to see the team that Mendilibar picked, because last week he did change it because this game against Valencia was the priority. Then he puts the second half subs on at Old Trafford and they end up getting the 2-2 draw. And now I think it's set for one of those classic European nights at the Sanchez-Pizjuan, because they don't have to worry about prioritising for the team next week. Mendilibar's done a fine job. I don't know what his best 11 is. Clearly, like Nisri and Navas and one or two others will be in his best 11. Brian Hill seems to be in his best 11. Bono are probably playing goal because Dimitrovic is playing in the league games. But I think last week they got away with it when they played kind of like a reserve team in the first leg and then were helped out by Man United getting complacent and then Sevilla putting on their better players. So that's going to be an interesting game this week. But Girona, clearly, Tete Castellano, Oriol Romeo getting the win, getting the 2 goals. That takes brilliant season for Girona. Really has. Newly promoted. Play good football. Can see too many goals, but they score loads of goals. So I'm pleased to see that they've eased their way out of trouble. And the only game we've got left is the Friday one.
Yes.
The Rayo 2, Osasuna 1. Osasuna look to be decent opponents for a lot of teams now with a cup final round the corner.
Terrific goal. That was Moy Gomez, wasn't it?
Yeah, and Issy Balazan. Aridane Hernandez didn't really put much thought into that slide tackle in his own 6-yard box, facing his own goal. He just wanted to get something on it, just launching himself into a tackle, and the tackle actually led to him going straight in. So it was a lively game, though. Rayo back amongst winning ways, 40 points, and they finally, after the game, we've got to where we wanted to be this season. So despite the fact they're home, the 40 points total is a target, and it always is. And
realistically. They're only...
Exactly.
Yeah, was it 4 points last season? They ended up above the relegation zone, having, you know, we were talking about where the, you know, which European race they were in, and, you know, at various points, weren't we?
So congratulations to them on their achieving their objective. And now they can look upwards and turn a good season into a fine season.
Yes. Right. I think we'll leave it there, Terry. It's been lovely talking to you. Good luck with the old Yugoslavia shirt behind you there, obviously. offers a welcome.
Got some great ones to put up in the future.
So watch out for those. If you want to be a Patreon, patreon.com/LTEL. Thank you to the Patreons. Thank you for those of you who've got in touch with us as well. And we'll be back with some Patreon stuff again. More European games to come, isn't there? And then we're into a busy round of La Liga. Busy spell of La Liga as well. So we'll see you for plenty more podcasts coming up. Thank you for support. Bye-bye.